commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. My format is on a Monday. It's business and economics, and usually the Laundry House Gang, or a portion of them, is on Tuesdays, but I switched them around, and tomorrow will be business and economics because I have a gentleman coming into town specifically for that. So in the studio with me with the Laundry House Gang, I have Wayne Heimer. How are you doing, Wayne?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And I've got Al Barrett. How are you doing, sir?
Fantastic.
Enjoying yourselves?
Absolutely.
You know, I got you on it now. So go ahead. Test 1, 2, 3.
Test 1, 2, 3.
There you go. Anyway, you had a bison meeting last week.
Yeah, last week we had the Lower Nokel Wood Bison Planning Team meeting, mm-hmm. and we created our third revision of our management plan, and we lowered some standards. And
you know, I was cracking up. Fairbanks, I was watching this. I'm in a suit and tie, and everyone's looking at me like I'm with the IRS or FBI or you know, Drug Enforcement Agency. And here they are talking, trying to, you know, what is standard, you know, what is standard hunting, you know, for this. And they're trying to think what they did in prehistoric times because you haven't done it yet. So
yeah.
You're trying to figure out, you know, what is standard? What was, you know, oh my goodness. So you're pulling out all these maps and, you know, 12,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, trying to figure out what standard hunting was on these things back then. And I was just cracking up.
Yeah, kind of the debate was what we were talking about wasn't really the standard, but at some point there's people that want to have it reviewed to see if there's a customary traditional use.
Customary traditional, that's right.
And
yeah.
So
C&T.
You know, when things like that have a positive finding of customary traditional use, they get a higher priority, and it revolves and is intertwined with subsistence. Which means then, you know, when there's a shortage or there's not enough animals for everybody, just the highest qualifiers, you know, mm-hmm. are able to apply to go hunting. And, you know, generally the first people out of it is the non-residents. So what we had there was, you know, the rural contingency, mm-hmm. you know, trying to, the new buzzword is food security, you know, trying to, you know, get that in this plan. And And we really can't because, like you said...
How many bison are out there? About 120?
There is no such thing as food security.
Yeah.
That's why we work and stuff.
So a little update on that. We're down to 72-ish.
Okay.
So we had another bad year. If you remember, a little over a year ago, we put 28...
out there, new ones,
28 new ones that were young yearlings. Most of those didn't survive this last winter. Or spring, and then a lot of other ones didn't. So we went from roughly 140 animals in the last couple of years down to 72-ish, and due to the weather, the icing conditions, getting layers of ice and snow, it's very hard for the bison to get to the feed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
this may I?
Yeah, Wayne Heimer. Yes, please do.
You know, how much do you want to know about bison? You know, it's,
start at the beginning.
Well,
they have horns.
The beginning is they were extirpated. You know, there weren't any.
Mm-hmm.
Well, The real beginning, I think, starts about 1996 or so, mm-hmm. when Bob Stevenson, my friend, had been sent up to Fort Yukon to be the area biologist. And he was sent to do a check station to see why there weren't any moose in the country. And he had broken his foot and whatever and hadn't run big power boats, so I managed to go with him for a while. And we're going up the river one day. We're having a wonderful time. I mean, nobody's coming by to be checked or whatever. You know, we're catching some pike and some salmon and shooting grouse and cooking over the campfire and sleeping late. And, I mean, it's just a great...
Getting paid.
Just a great, you know, field pay opportunity. So we're going up the river one day. I said, Bob, I kind of need to go to the bathroom. He says, well, just take care of that over the side. I said, no, we're going nowhere. We're doing nothing. Stop the boat. I want to take a proper leak in the woods. So we pull the boat up to this big, tall gravel bank, tie it up, and crawl up over the bank. We're on the edge of this huge dry lake, monstrous thing. And, you know, we're looking around to water the bushes there. And I said, Bob, the reason there are no moose up here is because this is buffalo country. The only reason, only place I've seen this particular plant association, silverberry and sedge, is on the bars of the Delta River where the bison live. So we had a big laugh about that deal. And the next, I go home the next week, the endangered species guy from the Fish and Wildlife Service comes up because we're in the Yukon Flats Refuge or something. And Bob's just fooling with the guy's head. And he says, see, this plant association, this is indicative of bison habitat, whatever. And the guy says, no kidding. He'd get real excited because wood bison are on sale because they're endangered in Canada and they're looking for a place to archive the genotype so it won't get wasted. Be like a...
Now, I'm going to cut to the chase. This all started because you had to go number one.
Right. Don't let those biologists out in the field.
So basically, 30 years later, because you had to go number one in the field, we got wood bison that are dying in horrible ways out there.
I think that gives me leave to speak about it, even though I don't know a whole heck of a lot. But the important thing to me is that through all the machinations and getting wood bison from Canada and archiving them and keeping them at the Wildlife Center down at Portage and all whatever else, and it was costing the department a lot of money, we kind of knew that the Anoka was not the very best place to put them, but we couldn't put them here, we couldn't put them there for this political reason or that special interest group or whatever. And finally, the commissioner just said, get rid of them. And the only place to put them was on the Anoka as an experimental population. Well, the experiment hadn't turned out all that well. Even though we planned the heck out of stuff we couldn't control, like weather. And now we've got to revise our plan to make another plan, and we're just wrapped so far around the axle that it's kind of humorous, actually.
Do you think you're going to be trying to introduce any more out there to take care of the population that's shrank?
Not out there. There's a real push to put them either in Mental Flats or the Yukon Flats, which are the only other two places, according to the 10J rule that was in the Federal Registry.
That would be the experimental population rule?
Yes.
10J.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
So, Mineral Flats area is habitable for them?
Yes, that's the second best place in the state. The Yukon Flats is the first place in the state.
Which is where we thought would be ideal.
But then what happened?
Well, then what happened was... we told the feds, and they were all excited about getting endangered species, many and whatever, and they were all for it, until we told them, well, actually, we'd kind of like people to use these for food. And that was...
You're going to go kill, reintroduce endangered species. You must be an Alaskan. Yeah. You must be from Fairbanks.
And then, up until that time, the department had been kind of against it, and the feds were for it. When that happened, the department came for it, and the feds became against it.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a... quick commercial break as we discuss unique things. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. I've got a portion of the Laundry House Gang here with me. Wayne Heimer, Al Barrett, and we'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Abby was released from prison after serving time for a minor crime. She was dropped in a parking lot near a soup kitchen in Anchorage, and instantly she was homeless. Without food, phone, or money, she made it to Fairbanks, only to find her family network was no longer in place. Rather than couch surf, risking victimization by men who prey on homeless women trapped by the cold, she made the decision to spend the winter in a tent. By February, worn down by the intolerable cold and moisture in the tiny space, she contracted pneumonia. Burning with fever, Abby made it to the rescue mission. She met a young woman there who told her about the love of Jesus, then showed that love by spending the night at the ER as Abby's condition stabilized. Abby returned to the mission and her life was saved. Without you, there is no mission, and Abby's story ends in the tiny dark tent. Please donate today at FairbanksRescueMission.org. That's FairbanksRescueMission.org.
Have I told you how I enjoy our time together? Talking about this and that, I don't rightly remember. Sometimes we need reminders about important things, like turning on your septic tank circulating pump to prevent freeze-ups. That's important. And making sure you can see your septic drain clean out. My family remembers Bigfoot pumping and thawing to pump me out once a year. That's important, so I continue to serve them much better.
Ho, ho, ho! Santa's elves have been busy, and they're ready to help you get a big jump on your holiday shopping this weekend at the Holiday Marketplace. There'll be over 175 mini specialty shops with one-of-a-kind gifts, beaded earrings, gorgeous stained glass, head-to-toe fur, and so much more. With so many items and vendors, there's bound to be something for everyone on your list. So come on out to the Holiday Marketplace this weekend at the Carlson Center. Friday, noon to 7, 10 to 6 on Saturday, and 11 to 5 on Sunday. Ho, 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 ho! The Holiday Marketplace, sponsored by The Radio Station.
Weather brought to you by the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks. Your eyes connect you to your world. Care for them with the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks, your eye health professionals on Mini Street.
KFAR weather.
Snow likely today, otherwise cloudy. Daytime high is approaching 18, winds out of the west around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy tonight, snow likely, lows dip down to about 11. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow, snow likely, highs level off around 17. 1 to 2 inches of snow today through tomorrow. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Al Barron and Wayne Heimer in the studio with me. Now, Wayne, you know what I'm going to talk about. What is it?
Squirrels.
That's right. How you doing with them?
They're out and running around. You should think by now they'd be huddled up in their warrens and not leaving a lot of tracks in the snow, but the winter so far being like it is, they're out and they're running around, and I'm just too busy to kill them. I think they.
Well, what do I always tell you what to do? What's my
13-year-old and a 20-gauge shotgun?
That's right. And have you done that yet?
No, I haven't. It's a neighborhood safety. It's a public safety thing.
Yeah, right.
What if shot would fall on somebody's car? You know,
I've seen your house. That ain't happening. just physical impossibility. But that's okay.
It's a public safety thing.
When do the squirrels usually go to bed?
I had to ask Al that question.
They don't.
They don't hibernate at all due to cold weather,
if it's a super cold stretch, they may, you know,
kind of stay in,
you know, huddle in. Yeah. Yeah. Interestingly enough,
you're having some issues.
Many years ago, somebody came to my tannery and said, somebody told me you catch flying squirrels in the wintertime.
Oh, God.
I said, yeah, it's not uncommon at all. And he says, they can't be flying squirrels. They hibernate. I said, well, these ones don't. Well, they're not flying squirrels. I said, well, I'll call you when I bring some in. So, you know, a couple of weeks went by, saved up enough in a 5-gallon pail running the trap line. And I called that person up from the university, and I don't remember who it was anymore. And I said, are these flying squirrels? And he's like, where'd they come from? I said, you know, Bonanza Burn area. And he's like, this can't be.
Yeah, the squirrel, you know, our squirrel management policy and our management plan for harvest and allocating the harvest is squirrels are welcome in the neighborhood as long as they don't touch a building. So one day, there's a squirrel running back.
For your management plan of the squirrels.
Yes, the squirrel management plan. We've had quite an extensive planning team on it. So
it sounds like you've had a few rewrites, too.
Yeah, the major rewrite is I discovered flying squirrels because there's a squirrel running back and forth on the deck railing. And I said, well, you little bugger, you're not allowed to touch the house. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to make you jump off. Take that. So I go out there, and I'm getting closer and closer and closer to the squirrel, and finally the squirrel goes, you know, and puts out his little things and glides clear across the yard to a tree. I said, I think that was a flying squirrel. And when I was in my trapping period, I would catch more flying squirrels than I wanted, and so I kind of cut back on that particular set, which was the only one I ever caught anything on. So.
And they have the softest fur.
Oh, they're neat.
They are just real. I don't know why it's not a desirable fur on the fur market. It's
probably because you got to catch about 1,000 of them to make
it
anything.
It is nice.
And their heads are built like a F-22. I mean,
yeah, small.
Small and sloped. I mean, they're radar.
Yeah. Fairbanks, all the discussions we've had and the learning opportunities for you about flying squirrels in the interior in Fairbanks and how Al has caught them and Wayne has to put up with them.
Yeah, they affect my squirrel management plan in a major way. It's a non-target species.
So tell me about the cake aspect.
Well, Native Village of Cake, which is down south, and east. During COVID, somehow came up with the notion that they were food insecure and went to the Federal Subsistence Board, Al's friends, and got the Federal Subsistence Board to open an emergency season for them for purposes of food security, even though the state season was closed, presumably for conservation reasons. Well, the state, you know, having read ANILCA, which is where the Federal Subsistence Board kind of has its germ of an idea, it's not in there really, it said there's a portion in there that says nothing in this act shall enlarge or diminish the role of the state in management anything. Well, that seemed like a pretty enlargement or diminishment of state authority for the feds to just say you guys can do whatever you want. So the state sued to see if that was really the case. And that case dragged on for several years. I think it was 2019, now it's 2023. And the ruling came down from Federal District Court Judge Sharon Gleason the other day that...
She's never been good for Alaska.
No. We're not... I guess the kindest thing we could say is that she's a judicial activist.
Yes.
And we want to be kind.
That's very kind.
Yeah. So she writes a decision that's about 40 pages long, and it's this and it's that, and it's a whole bunch of stuff. And at the end, she says, the feds can do anything they want. And that's where it stands, I guess, isn't it, Al?
Yep, that's the way I read it. yep, they gave, even as far as to go, that the federal manager of that particular real estate has the authority to open and close a season.
And the other ringer kind of in the deal is that the Federal Subsistence Board has to either do what the local advisory committees say they would like done or give them good reasons for not doing it, which means basically that the locals are running the outfit. And if you're not on the island, too bad. It's balkanized wildlife management to a degree that we never thought possible.
Oh boy, that's a game changer. That she has opened up Pandora's box.
And whether that will be appealed further up, I would presume.
Yeah,
it would be.
Yeah, I imagine there's some appeal going to go on that,
and it'll go what to the Ninth Circuit?
Yeah,
it'll where go, she it, got a bunch of her advice. Yeah.
It'll probably go to the three-member review, and then whatever decision there, you can send it to the full body, and they don't have to take it up.
Yeah, stuff like that often gets remanded.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I know what remanded means.
Sent back down for adjudication, with taking this and this and this into consideration.
So
remanded back.
So a lower court screws up.
Then Judge Gleason screws up.
And then it goes to a higher court, and they say you screwed up, and they send it back to the person who screwed up.
That's right.
Okay. Now I understand it.
Which is all screwed up.
Well, that's exactly what happened in Sturgeon, the first go-around. Sturgeon 1 is, you know, made it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court made some rulings and then sent it back to the Ninth Circuit.
You didn't change a thing.
And they just dug their feet in and said, we don't care what the Supreme Court said. We're holding our own. So then
we're writing our own political bias.
So then we got John Sturgeon, too, and you know went to the Supreme Court again and won. And now the federal counterparts just ignore it. Said, yeah. Well, yeah, you won, but we don't care. We don't care.
I understand perfectly.
Well, so Al, how's business for you this year?
Good. On another note, the Board of Game was being sued by an attorney out of Anchorage over the Mulchatna Caribou Predator Program that was the board had.
That was
approved.
Very successful.
Yes, there was 100 bears killed and a handful of wolves, and one of the attorneys in Anchorage filed litigation against the board and the state, and ultimately the judge came back on that one and said that she didn't have any standing and she didn't have any harm done, so hers was dismissed.
Good.
So there's one more out there with the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, and we'll see how that one goes.
Well, it's kind of interesting to me, just as a creepy old history guy, this is the law firm where this lady works is a very prominent Alaska law firm and was AFN's major law firm lobbyist, you know, in Washington, D.C. for a while. And, sponsored, what was that on KUEC, Alaska Native News for a long time. And I don't know quite what the lineage or heritage might be of this interesting lady. But her name is one of those on the original partners in that law firm.
What's the law firm?
Birch Horton Bittner and Chereau.
What's her name?
Michelle Bittner.
They're at 520 L Street, Peterson Tower.
You know them.
I know the building.
Real estate guy.
Yeah. Yes, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Huh. And the late Ted Stevens' widow, I think, had that name at one time.
Bittner, yeah. Hmm. So, caribou season, how'd it go?
Caribou season went well. It was fast for the 40-mile hunt.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a hunt in Unit 13. Completely closed down. No caribou taken out of there. 40-mile had a really low quota, which went really fast. But the North Slope hunters, people that chose to hunt the Central Arctic caribou herd or the porcupine herd, had fantastic success. And, we took in a lot of work from those two herds. Both are doing really well. They're growing. Porcupine herd is at record numbers, well over 300,000. Central Arctic is, around 35,000, which is up from 12,000 a few years ago when they crashed. So, one of the few success stories for caribou that, after a crash, rebounded so quickly.
Isn't that even higher than it was before the pipeline?
Have the roads up there ever made a population crash?
No. Nor the pipeline. So, that's one of those myths. Of course, the Ambler Road, that's one of the concerns with people that don't want the Ambler Road put in is, it'll affect the Western Arctic caribou movement, and
no, it won't.
And it'll affect people's backyard, giving more access to more Alaskans.
My brother Dano, the chairman of ADA, will be on the show tomorrow.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
You can call him up and give him a good wet floor.
It doesn't do any good.
No.
We've heard so much about the Ambler Road and the biological data that says that caribou went there and turned around and left. And I was talking to a fellow that knows the other day and says, oh, that was four caribou.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or five.
That was the Red Dog Mine Road where they were watching them. And one caribou would be like one of the first ones, so they're not really the pushers of migration. They showed up, bounced around a couple times, and would cross the road. But when the main herd would go, they would go over the road.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. When we come back, Wayne Heimer has something to say.
All right. Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
The United States is pushing for humanitarian pauses in Israel-Hamas conflict. Secretary of State Antony Blinken speaking from an airport in Turkey.
We've engaged the Israelis on steps that they can take to minimize civilian casualties. We're working, as I said, very aggressively on getting more humanitarian assistance into Gaza, and we have very concrete ways of doing that.
But attacks on U.S. bases in the Middle East continuing. Florida Congressman Michael Waltz on the Fox Business Network.
As long as Tony Blinken is, you know, making the rounds in the Middle East and not announcing a 180, a complete reversal on their Iran policy and a return to maximum pressure, you are going to continue to have these attacks.
Iranian-backed militant group Hezbollah in Lebanon says they plan to get more involved in the conflict if Israel sends more troops into Gaza. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Alaska's news source reports a man from Kenai, charged with making threats against a U.S. senator, made his first appearance in a federal courtroom in Anchorage Friday afternoon. Arthur Graham, 46, was arrested last Monday after allegedly submitting an online message to a U.S. senator stating his desire to kidnap and kill her. Neither the criminal complaint nor anyone in court Friday would say which U.S. senator Graham is accused of threatening. Court documents refer to the senator as her. Judge Kyle Reardon said during Friday's hearing the maximum penalty for the alleged crime is 5 years in prison, 3 years supervised release, and a $250,000 fine. Graham spoke minimally during court, saying yes and no to questions from the judge. Detailed in the federal criminal complaint, Graham is accused of messaging in late September through an email feature on a senator's website. According to the FBI, Graham wrote that he had nowhere else to live and was facing eviction. The FBI said Graham admitted that he knew sending the message was illegal.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Men all over town are raving about Fairbanks Urology.
I had to go to the emergency room, and they realized that my bladder was blocked, and so they put a catheter inside of me. It was very awkward until I came here to Fairbanks Urology. The surgery that he came up with was totally not invasive. About 2 weeks later, the catheter was able to be removed. I think the man's a saint, honestly. Really, for what he's done for me.
Make the call today, 328-0989, for Fairbanks Urology.
Here are some facts to mull over as our trucks prepare to join you on the road. Kinross's trucking partner, Black Gold Transport, is headquartered right here in the Golden Heart of Alaska and has 36 years of experience and an outstanding safety record. The trucks are brand new and will be driven by drivers with experience in cold weather. The engines are highly efficient with low emissions. That's important because we all live here too. Get more facts at justthefactsak.com.
ABC Wednesday.
It's country music's biggest night.
The CMA Awards, live. With performances by Luke Bryan, Lainey Wilson, Jelly Roll and Kay Michelle. Old Dominion with Megan Maroney. Carly Pierce featuring Chris Stapleton. Tanya Tucker with Little Big Town. And more.
The best in country music! Woo!
Luke Bryan and Peyton Manning host.
The CMA Awards, live.
Wednesday, 8, 7 Central on ABC. And stream next day on Hulu.
Hi, this is Scott Trout of Cordell & Cordell. If you're a dad who is facing divorce, there are extra layers of stress that may include stereotypes and assumptions. No two situations are the same. Our legal experience and dedication prepare us for whatever legal challenges we face together. You need a partner you can count on. For more than 30 years, Cordell & Cordell has represented men in divorce.
For matters in California, visit CordellCordell.com. 3 East 3rd Avenue, Suite 200, San Mateo, California, 94401.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM. And streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Before our commercial, Wayne Heimer is going to tell us about a caribou story on a road.
Yeah, I was going to ask Al to tell us caribou story about when he was almost trampled by the
were you on the road?
No, I was hunting up out of Ambler on Kobuk River, just above Onion Portage, where there's a known huge migration route for western Arctic caribou, and I was up there hunting, and I had a friend along with me, and we started seeing some caribou coming through the woods, and we were sitting on the riverbank, and they were coming, and they got to the edge, you know, first 30 or 40 showed up. They got right next to the water but didn't want to go in. And I kept looking back because I kept hearing stuff, and all you could see is caribou as far as you could see through the woods. And they were coming, and, you know, they're making all their noises. They're quite vocal. And, you know, finally there's several hundred of them sitting there at the riverbank, you know, in arm's reach of me. They don't care if I'm even there. And we're talking, and there's still more caribou coming. So the ones that were in the back were wondering why the ones in the front aren't moving. And they kept pushing, and when finally the first two or three fell into the Kobuk River,
they all went in.
The whole match, it was like you unclogged a drain, and they all came through there, and, you know, they just soon as run us over. I petted some as they went by, and I just thought it was the neatest thing I've ever witnessed in my life. I've heard about things like that when the 40-mile caribou would go through mining camps.
Yeah.
It would just
stampede.
Yeah, just like a stampede. So it was really something to witness, and, yeah, the river didn't slow them up, and neither will a road.
We missed a phone call there because of your long story.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that's okay. Maybe they'll call back and correct your long story. I don't
yeah.
know. Yeah, it's interesting with the Ambler Road project. The BLM weighing in when they're only 25 miles of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, well. That happens. So,
speaking of bad news.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Our favorite Secretary of Interior.
Oh, Deb Haaland, yeah.
Yeah, she just appointed somebody deputy undersecretary of something or another for this or that, which is kind of an important position for us, who just happens to have a history of being a mouthpiece for the radical environmental people.
So yeah.
Try not to be shocked.
She could not get confirmed by the Senate.
No.
So they gave her something bigger. Really? Oh, my God. So, if I was to go hunting or fishing this weekend or this month in November, Wayne, what would be on your list besides coming over to your house and nailing a few squirrels?
Well, I think it'd be an opportune time, as soon as the ice is right, to go burbot fishing.
Okay.
And
it'd still be active and hungry?
Yeah, I think so. They're, once the ice is on, it's a little early maybe, but I always enjoy burbot fishing from now till almost March.
Do you go for them on the Chena or on the Tanana?
I prefer the Tanana. I used to catch them in back of my house on the lower Chena, but I think that got fished out or something. Mm. It was just, there used to be, catch them right off the bank there and the ice set, but seemed like you have to chase them further and further and further down the river.
When they hit the Tanana, do you go upriver or downriver?
I usually go downriver, because that's where I know the water.
Okay. Al, what would you suggest?
What I used to do this time of the year was I'd either be goat hunting or deer hunting on Kodiak. I used to go for 10 days to 2 weeks, November.
How about Ketchikan, Wrangell, or Sitka?
Never been there.
This time of year, I know people are out there right now.
Yeah. What I didn't like about doing anything in Southeast is I didn't have any connections in Southeast Alaska.
Yeah.
And at that time, it's a lot steeper country. Boat access is more something you'd live on.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was always expensive, and I was always raising a family and doing things on the dime. Kodiak was
very food, not sport.
Yeah. Kodiak was very good back in the day when you could fly from Fairbanks to Kodiak City for $250 round trip on Alaska Airlines, you know, spend another $200 with the mail plane from Kodiak to Larsen Bay. I could do a whole trip for under $800. Yeah, under $800 by the time I took our deer meat and everything back. And trapping season opened at 10, so you could get a good haul of foxes that you could pelt out and usually pay for my trip. And then I started hunting goats in the Wrangells several years ago, and that's really fun, and it's fairly inexpensive.
Where do you go for the goats at? What area?
Out of McCarthy. Yeah, get a charter transporter to drop me off and go hunt on the south side of the Wrangells.
Speaking of Kodiak deer,
mm-hmm.
There's a fella named Jake Jacobson who's been a dentist and a guide and whatever forever, lives on Kodiak. And in the course of guiding for deer on Kodiak, he began to notice some anomalies in the deer that he was shooting, and has a book out that I stumbled onto. I've known this story for a while because I know Jake, about the strange reproductive anomaly that he was seeing in deer on South Kodiak Island. It's Jake Jacobson's book on Kodiak deer stories or something like that. It's a bunch of really interesting biology as well as hunting stories.
You ever read the book, Last of the Great Bearmen, Pendleton Talvison?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Track of the Kodiak? Those are some great bear stories, too.
Yeah.
Those are the late 40s to early 60s, and man, those are some big bears.
Yeah, they're big ones down there.
Looking at our moose harvest this year, overall, how do you think we did?
Just anecdotally?
Yes.
I think it kind of went, yeah, because I didn't hear any numbers.
Grombo didn't get one, did he?
I don't think he did. They're relying on Bill Saddlers that or Saddlebergs that's in the freezer since 2008. Anyways, I think the season was late, you know, as far as people being really successfully harvesting. So the people that had to hunt from the 1st to the 15th because of the season didn't fare as well as the people that got to hunt after the 15th of September, which did a lot better. And that was kind of the same scenario as last year.
Is it me, or does it seem like in our weather, we've had a weather change where everything is a month shifted later? You know, you look at November right now, this reminds me of this time in October.
Yeah.
You look at breakup. Breakup happens later April versus to early May versus on tax day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this seems like we're same amounts of weather. It's just shifted a month.
Right.
Yeah. The plants out at my house, the weeds in my yard were all screwed up this year. And they didn't happen like they should have.
They happen, though. All the weeds happen.
Well, what's supposed to happen is first the equisetum, horsetail, shows up and it's green, and then that's followed by dandelions and clover and then actual bluegrass. This year it all happened at the same time.
You know, Wayne, I hate to say this, but your management plans are very well written, but you don't implement them worth a poop.
Well, I've had experience in management planning with the department.
That's writing the plans, but how about implementing your own plan on your own property?
Well, I got to have some meetings, a focus group,
stakeholders.
Stakeholders meetings, yes.
Then
the other stakeholders, my wife,
then respond to what their thoughts are on. And then see what's customary and traditional.
Yeah, well, if you think about planning a little bit, the reason we make a plan, any kind of plan, is to control the future. And when you can't control the future, your plan is pretty much pie in the sky.
You're not controlling your future, my friend.
No, I'm not.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break again. We're at 907-458-TALK. That's 907-458-8255. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The world's only all-female Journey cover band is coming to Fairbanks. She Clips will be rocking the spur on Veterans Day, Friday, November 10th. You'll fall stone in love with She Clips. She Clips faithfully pays tribute to the band who created the soundtrack to our lives. VIP tickets are available for only $35, which includes priority seating, meet and greet, and more. General admission just $25. Any way you want it, She Clips will capture the hearts of every Journey fan. Doors open at 6:30 for VIP and 7 p.m. for general admission. This is a 21 and up show. Don't stop believing in the magic of She Clips, the world's only female Journey tribute band. Get your tickets now at aktickets.com. She Clips, Friday, November 10th at the Spur. The show is brought to you by RNDC Alaska, the Westmark, and the radio station.
McKinley Orthopedics Sports Medicine and Spine is proud to announce the completion of our multi-million dollar project investing back into Fairbanks. McKinley Imaging offers state-of-the-art MRIs, and McKinley Surgical offers surgical procedures in our brand new outpatient surgery center. As a recent Business of the Year recipient, we continue to invest in the most up-to-date technology so our patients don't have to leave the place we call home for care. With clinics in Fairbanks and North Pole, we are open 8 to 8 Monday through Friday and Saturday 10 to 8 for your convenience. McKinleyOrtho.com.
Last month, Denali Industrial Supply and Milwaukee Tool teamed up to bring you the Milwaukee Mega Sale. A sale so big, they're extending it through November. Special pricing on Milwaukee 12-volt and 18-volt Baird tools and batteries, full kits, hand tools, pack-out storage system, hole saw kits, accessories, and more. Ask their helpful sales staff how you can get a free with your purchase of Milwaukee power tools or pack-out products. Free is limited. The Milwaukee Mega Sale. Extended through November, only at Denali Industrial Supply. Off Van Horn Road, look for the big red roof.
KFAR weather.
Snow likely today, otherwise cloudy skies. Highs around 18, westerly winds around 5 miles an hour. Cloudy skies tonight, snow likely, lows around 11. Snow likely tomorrow, high of 17. 1 to 2 inches of snow today through tomorrow. That's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. David Prisner Stewart here with Wayne Heimer and Al Barrett. Al, got anything on the board of game coming up?
We have about 8 agenda change requests that we have to review on the 16th of November. I believe you have until the 9th of November to, you know,
get in a change of request.
Yep. To give comments on those. They're pretty varied. There's a couple boundary changes by the department. Somebody, I think that one's getting pulled, but there, somebody was asking to remove the one of the requirements for full curl, to remove the age requirement. But I think that may be already a proposal in the book.
Hold it. How do you know what the age of a sheep is?
Well, under the terms of full curl, the definition of full curl means it's a full curl ram completing a 360 degree circle, or it can be 8 years old or older, or it can be have its horns broken, tips broken off,
broomed off.
Yeah, well, broom's not defined, but broken is. And so somebody's asking to remove the age from it because people start counting rings, and it can be very difficult in the field to count at least 8 rings on a sheep, and so you ultimately take a sublegal sheep because of you didn't either see what you seen, or
it's because of your choice to try and age a sheep from 200 yards when you shouldn't be doing it.
I know. So. I was going to get into that with a 2-8 power scope, maybe some binoculars or a spotting scope.
Yeah.
Well, that part of the regulation exists to allow harvest of sheep that might not be full curl but are old.
Any AC things going on?
Yes. So the Fairbanks Advisory Committee will meet this Wednesday. It's an important meeting. It's their election meeting. If you want to go support somebody, I think there's at least 4 or 5 seats open. I think most of them, all but one, you know, are people rerunning. If you want to run, or you want to be involved at the advisory committee level, and it's a great time to go down there, tell them who you are. They'll put your name on the board. It's very, you know, informal, and it's usually a good meeting. And then they'll have a few things on there after, because that meeting, the election will go pretty quick. We don't have to wait 3 days and do a recount or anything like that.
Worry about a ballot machine that's, you know, might not be doing it right.
So it's fairly quick. And I know there'll be some fish proposals being discussed. You got the Lower Cook Inlet meetings coming up. And we'll start getting into survey data from harvest, you know, how good was the harvest in the region or the area. And they'll probably discuss wood bison again, too. I'm not sure what they have on their agenda, but they'll do a little work Wednesday night also. It's at the J.P. Jones Center at 6 o'clock. You know, show up, and there's a lot of good people there. You'll learn a lot.
Wayne, tell us about your latest book publication.
Well, it's the same one that has been out for about a year. But
sheep management?
It's the history of Dall sheep management from the Pleistocene to the present. It's a remarkably short book, considering the time period.
It's about 125 pages.
Yeah, something like that.
Don't ask me how I know that, because you gave it to me and I read it.
Yeah, well, it's this week I had a boom in sales.
I was going to get to that. Tell us about your podcast. Where did it happen from, first of all?
It happened from my office, the world headquarters of Wayne's World, out there on Chena Pump Road. A local fellow made good, a gentleman named Tyler Friel, is on, I think, the masthead at Outdoor Life, and he writes for them about various things, and also has a podcast. I gave him the book, and he says, suppose I come out and visit, and we had a nice chat, and he put that up on YouTube or wherever that goes. I'm not sure I know what a podcast is, really, but I did one. And it was a lengthy interview, and he put it up, and people heard about the book, since I don't know nothing about birth and no sales. And book sales shot up probably 10 or 12 books. It was just fantastic. But if sheep hunters are interested in that podcast, they can find it.
You should be. It's a very good book.
And, it was... The demand was so overwhelming that I'd get like one or two emails every day.
Wow.
And folks would say, oh, by the way, I tried to buy it on the website and my card wouldn't work.
Al, did I ever tell you about the first time I ever met Wayne Heimer?
No, but I was thinking maybe the podcast has something to do from the pod people.
I couldn't tell you.
There was this event. I think it was at the Carlson Center or maybe at a Department of Fish and Game, and you have this sheep group, the sheep biologists, of which Wayne was there. And I walked up to him and I surprised him by the question I asked. I said, for whatever reason, I was out messing around at the muskox farm, and I came across this enclosed pen. May have been what I was doing legal, may have been not legal. I was 17, 18 years old. And I came across this enclosed pen of all these sheep, these Dall sheep. And I go, how did you guys get those? And he was staggered. He goes, no one ever remembered that thing that we did. We went and got, darted or trapped or, hoodwinked some sheep to come back to the thing with us so we could study them. But I asked, that's the first time I ever met him. And probably about 1984, 85.
Well, now I can level with you.
Oh, you lied to me. Tell us the truth.
Well, there's a professor up at the university of, wildlife professor, mammalogy, biology, named Dale Guthrie. I think Dale's still with us. And he sent in a request to the department to catch some sheep to study. Mm-hmm. And he had some plan that apparently impressed the people in Juneau, and they gave him a permit, so he asked us to catch some sheep. Well, my first partner, Tony Smith, knew how to catch sheep with a drop net, so we go down to Usability coal mine, where they are, and we set up the net, and we bait some sheep in, and we catch them. And this is when I first knew I was a real sheep biologist. We're bringing these sheep back to town. I've got a yearling ram in my lap, and we're in Dale's carryall. And pretty soon my lap begins to feel real warm.
Felt like mama.
I says, ooh, I'm a real sheep biologist now. I've been christened.
Yeah. That's the first time I ever met him, though.
Anyway, we put the sheep in the pen up there, and Dale did the best he could, and the sheep eventually died.
Yeah.
And nothing really grandly beneficial ever came out of it, other than we got a little information on a disease of the mouth called contagious ecthyma, which is like really bad cold sores.
What does that get interesting?
I remember walking around sheep hunting and seeing this shack up in there, and said, well, there's a salt lick up there. There's sheep biologist Wayne Heimer used to come out here and study the sheep, and it was a good salt lick. That part of that shack still sitting up there.
Oh, boy.
And then, that was a long time ago, and then, finally got to meet him. I'm like, really? You're the guy that was up there?
Interesting how we come across each other's trails again.
It is.
Yeah. So I've got to decide what I would be doing, hunting or fishing. this year. What I, you know what I'd do? I would go down to the Delta Clearwater, and I would canoe it.
Why?
Because I can. And it's November. And how often do you say to yourself, I'm canoeing in November in the interior of Alaska? We're going to take a phone call with that thought. Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with the Lunder House Gang, and your name is?
Jamie, and hey, you guys are great.
Oh, thank you, Jamie.
Hey, was that biologist's name that taught biology, the natural history of Alaska, Doug Jamel?
Doug Kimmel?
Naturally. Doug Jamel, because he did die. Like, in great shape.
No, I was thinking of Dale Guthrie, who I think is still with us.
I thought you said, too. But you know what I'm sorry about? It's because I have, from over 20 years ago, my biology book right here. I learned so much in that class. It was really difficult, but it was really great. But then I didn't come in on your flying squirrel talk. They're my pet. Now, I despise the daytime rack squirrel.
Okay, remember this. 20-gauge shotgun and a 13-year-old can relieve you of your issues.
I got that. Look, but I love my night squirrels, I call them. They're my babies, and he's right about their fur. They are amazing. Did you say you were trapping my baby squirrels, my night squirrels?
That was Al. Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Al is a natural-born killer.
Why? And you know, what's different? What I remember from that class, and I can't remember how else they were, but they're more, they were living in, like, the witches' rooms and somewhere else, and they kind of hunker down together. I can't remember everything. I'm going to have to look it up one of these days again. But I don't know. I have a really fondness for my night squirrels. I love them. They are always stealing my suet, and I watch them out there. And I wish I'd have heard the rest of your story about the flying squirrels. But they do have beautiful fur, but, boy, I'd have a hard time. They're kind of like my pets. Now, the day squirrels, I can shoot all day long.
Yeah.
I call them the rat squirrels.
I'm kind of wondering how you know how soft their fur is.
Well, because I've gotten really close. I've been around a lot. I remember the first time that I noticed one in my yard here. I'd seen them a little bit before, and when I had them, but they would fly around us. So we had a barn, and it was night, and I was out there, and I was going through my snow trails that I was shoveling. And this was like back in, I don't know, the early, mid-90s. And there was this splat. You know how they make like splat Halloween witches as decorations?
Yeah.
There was a splatted thing on the front of my barn door.
Wow.
And I was like, what the hell is that? And I described it. I showed the girls. I said, look at this thing. And then he started moving around. And then they were everywhere. Have you noticed how
They repopulate real fast.
I love that, but I hate the day. I hate the little rats that come out. Anyway,
okay, we got to get going. I got to close up shop. I appreciate
I
the phone call.
About the butterflies and the bugs disappearing.
Okay. Call us back. Call us back, and we'll go through that. I got to go. Gentlemen, Al, any last words before we're off the air?
No, I think the other thing that I really like doing this time of the year, late October, early November, is I start creating sausages and doing a lot of smoking.
Okay.
With some of the moose meat and caribou that I got this fall.
Okay. Wayne?
I just sort of stand by in the distant past or distant area hoping Al will throw me a sausage. Not a jar of kimchi.
Hey, that kimchi's good stuff. Fairbanks, that is our show for today. Al, greatly appreciate your expertise. Wayne, your expertise too, and your wicked sense of humor. That's very... very potent. Fairbanks, I will see you tomorrow. We will have Dana Pruzon, my brother. He's going to come up here and talk about things that Ada's doing. And then you have a great day.